Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. And as you know, this is one of my favorite times of the week. And we have a surprise for you tonight. Somebody that many of you know and love, Richard Presser, is with me.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. Pleasure to join you. I'm visiting Carolyn for a couple of weeks, and so I thought I'd pop in.
I love it. And so, Richard, what are we going to discuss tonight?
As I recall, we were going to talk about reincarnation. And
right.
In particular, some evidence that some research that you were looking at. You want to talk about that?
Yes. Ian, can't think of his last name. Stevenson. Right. Tracked the lives of a lot of children who remembered living at another time. And not only did he track it, gathered the data, but he literally went to the places where these children remembered. And as I recall, I mean, it was so detailed that there was a child that remembered putting a box underneath of a floorboard, and they found the box. Another child remembered that there was a neighbor that hit them with a shovel and caused them to cross over. And he checked that story. It was actually true. So that's what's so interesting about his research that he did. He didn't just research the children who had remembered past lifetimes, but he tried to gather a lot of data around that particular life. Also, he did something else that was interesting. He gathered the parents from those past lifetimes and joined the parents from the present lifetime. And it was really interesting, the reactions that the child had in the home of each sets of parents. So if this topic is of interest to you, there's a lot of information on the internet. So what do you think of that, Richard?
I think it's fascinating. I think I love the story. I'm not saying it's accurate, but it's a nice illustration. A guy in England was thinking about doing his PhD thesis on the subject of reincarnation. And he mentioned it to an English friend who said, "Why on earth would you bother doing that? Everybody knows it's nonsense." And he then mentioned it to an Indian friend who said, "Why would you bother doing that? Everybody knows it's true."
Yes.
And so it illustrates this the power of belief about these things. There are parts of our world, communities in our world, if you will, that understand reincarnation, accept it, and live accordingly. And there are those, particularly in the West, who don't believe in reincarnation. And what's interesting is that most people are not aware of this, but the Catholic Church in its early days actually taught that reincarnation occurred. And it was only when, I believe it was Emperor Justinian in about 400-odd, who decided that having people reincarnating wasn't consistent with his view that, he was God. I'm not quite sure how all that worked, but anyway, that was the basis for it. And so he basically decreed, because it's forgotten today, but historically, when Rome was the great power it was, the Catholic Church was subservient to the emperor. But once Rome fell, then the church became all powerful, which is kind of what we remember. So the emperor in those early days could simply say what was so, and the church would bend to his will, and that's what happened. And so reincarnation was written out of the script, so to speak, for the Catholic Church at the time of Emperor Justinian, and that was that.
That's very interesting, I think, Richard. And something else I think bears discussion is the fact that there are many phobias, fears, that come from past lifetimes.
Yes.
Did you want to add anything to that?
It's a powerful element of what people need to deal with in this lifetime as they clear those energies from past lives. Those fears of many sorts, phobias, whatever term you wish to use, really the energies that are associated with those things that were present when the individual crossed over need to be cleared at some point in some manner.
There was something else that I found very fascinating. Stevenson found something else that it interested me, that there were times when a person crossed over because of an injury of some sort. And in the new lifetime, the new body showed some sort of result or mark or design on their body from that past lifetime. I thought that was very interesting.
Yes, you kind of inferred it, Carolyn, but his research, firstly, was very scientific in terms of how he approached it. It was not some casual inquiry. And the evidence was undeniable in terms of what came forth. I think he examined about 2,500 odd children on some level, and about half of them he could do the detailed work, and for whom, you know, the outcomes were undeniable. So, you know, it's a powerful weight of evidence for the truth of the occurrence of what we know of as reincarnation.
Yes, it's a fascinating story. And I'm sure there are people today who have fears, a phobia of some sort, and they wonder if it has arisen from a past lifetime. You probably have met people like that, haven't you, Richard?
Yes, I have certainly met people that are carrying phobias, but it's unusual that people actually get to the point of inquiring what the origin of it was. That's not so common. You know, it is true that it can certainly arise from past lives. That's certainly a powerful source of these things.
Well, I would say that if people want to heal, they have an issue in this lifetime that they want to heal, they have to look at that. Did that come from a past lifetime?
Yes.
Anything you care to add to that? Because you've done work with people who have been in that situation, Richard.
Well, what we mostly don't understand in life is that, firstly, we choose the major events that unfold in our lives. We choose our major partners. We choose our parents. In other words, it's not that it's preordained so much. It's that we have, before we've incarnated, chosen these major events. And one of the major drivers in all of that is the focus on clearing these negative past life karmic energies that exist from these past lives. And it's my understanding that this consciousness is the only consciousness in which these negative past life karmic energies are accumulated. And it's really only occurred here since the fall in Atlantis some 13,000 years ago. It was not planned, but that's been a consequence given how life is lived. And primarily it's because there's been so much violence in this world, so much murder and warfare and so on. So many people have died a violent death for one reason or another. And, you know, whether it be because they're of the light wanting to heal and protect people, and so those in power really don't want those things to happen, or you know, whether it be some other reason. But so often there are these powerful negative energies like fear and self-doubt and other things that are present when we cross over. And so when we come back, part of the objective in that lifetime is to clear those energies. And so what we do is we choose experiences that throw up those energies. So if, for example, fear is a major energy to clear, then we trigger experiences in this life. We actually plan it that bring forth fear, except no one teaches us what we're doing because most people don't have a clue what's going on. And so what happens is these fearful experiences are triggered. And if we understood, we would ask the question, why did I choose to trigger these fearful experiences? And if you keep asking those questions, you gradually get answers, and the answers begin to come very quickly, such that when you master this process, when something happens in your life, rather than trying to blame somebody else, you examine it and ask the question, what is it about me that triggered this experience? What is it I need to learn from this experience through this, for example, fear that's been triggered or anger or whatever it is? What do I need to learn about me? Because it's always about us. We think it's about other people, but it's never about other people. It's always about us. You know, we blame other people for our anger towards them. It's not about them. It's about us. Why? What is it about them that's triggering this anger in us? That's the thing to learn. But very few people understand this and act accordingly. When you do, it sets you free. So often these things are related. We've chosen experiences that trigger these energies in this lifetime. But because we haven't understood why we've done it, because we haven't understood in this life why we should ask that question, again, because to begin with, we, in this society, we don't even accept the notion of reincarnation for the most part, so the question doesn't have any context. We can't consider the notion that we might actually plan to trigger these events in our lives that bring these energies forth, but it goes on all the time. You know, many of you would know that I was doing soul healing sessions pretty extensively for a number of years, and, you know, I would see these things turning up all the time. And often I would say to people who are having a really difficult time in their lives, I would have them try to have them look at it from a completely different point of view, because they've set up those circumstances in their lives to make them look, to make them examine what's actually going on, because what's manifest in our lives is a pointer to, including all illness and disease, is a pointer to spiritual or emotional issues that need to be healed. And many of these come from past lives.
Absolutely. I believe in that very strongly. Along the same idea, but a, shall we say, a little different point of view, I am of the belief that groups of souls travel together, changing positions, sometimes parents or siblings or grandparents. And a lot has gone on between these individuals over maybe several lifetimes. People carrying a grudge. People not willing to be kind to one another because of something that they remember on a very subliminal basis. So it all goes along with what you say, Richard. We really need to look underneath of the events that are happening and start asking questions. But my thought about that is we get caught up so in our day-to-day living, earning an income, taking care of our jobs, that we don't always take the time to ask those questions. However, there's a back door. And that back door are dreams. When we don't handle things in the front door, so to speak, those issues come to us in the back door. And I've always recommended to people to have a dream journal. I remember that was something also that Edgar Cayce suggested. have a dream journal. And when you wake up from sleep, write in your journal your dreams and also the emotion that you felt when you woke up. If it was fear or love or tragedy, they all have a bearing on what you need to explore. You have anything to add to that, Richard?
No, not really. I think what you're saying is accurate. I think that, again, you know, in the world that we live, all of these elements that we're discussing here, all of these ideas are not encouraged. You know, those of us who pursue these kind of paths are looked on as being a tad crazy by most people, because that's not the accepted view of things. That's not the model that's been imposed upon us, you might say, taught in school and in so many other places. And most people don't understand why these things happen the way they do. And it's no accident. It's all carefully planned. But it's, you know, I think the ideas that you're bringing forth, Carolyn, are absolutely on the money.
Thank you, and you too. I would like to open up the door for questions that people might have. I'm sure there are people out there who want to ask some questions about this topic that we're discussing tonight. So, past lifetimes and the energy surrounding that can either, the soul never forgets, bring us happiness, or it can bring us challenges. We might have a lot to overcome. We don't always understand why we do have to overcome that, but it's there. I was reminded of that film that we saw called The King's Speech. The king who had very difficult time in speaking and went to visit someone who helped him work his way through that. Could have been something he picked up in the present life. Could have been a past life. We don't understand it. But we all have challenges of one sort or another that have to be overcome. And the only way we overcome this is to ask questions. As you know, Richard, and you're a big believer in this too, meditation. I know you meditate.
I do. Mm.
And you suggest to other people to meditate.
It's true.
Do you have any meditation stories? In other words, people who have, you might say, come to life or visited someone who was meditating? I think you got a couple of those stories, don't you?
Yes, well, you know, during the soul healing sessions that I've done over the years, some people on those, you might say the specific past life clearing work that I would do on those calls and do on those calls, because I still do them occasionally. Some people have extraordinarily detailed experiences. It's not common, but it does happen. Some of them are truly amazing.
What are you referring to, a detailed, explain that a little better.
They might experience a past life of their own where they're in a particular location in the world and are experiencing what they did in that lifetime as part of the clearing process. So that's one of the things that can happen. I was sharing on one of the monthly conference calls that Carolyn and I do a personal experience that's unfolded for me in meditation in recent times. I, for many years, have been able to connect with the great Babaji, the great Sri Mahavatar Babaji or Sri Guru Babaji. He's known by both names. He's a extraordinary individual who, by my calculations, is over 2,500 years old and looks about 30. And he's referred to in Yogananda's autobiography of a yogi, He's also referred to in the channeled work, Anna, grandmother of Jesus, and he was actually, according to that work, one of Yeshua's teachers, which makes perfect sense. And it's very interesting because Yogananda, when he came to America in the 20s, one of the things he said was that Yeshua was a great yogi, which of course all fits together. And more recently, the same friend who gave me a copy of Yogananda's autobiography recommended a newer autobiography by a guy who's still alive. I'm just trying to think of the name of it, something like Apprenticed to a Himalayan Master, I think it's called, by, bear with me, I'll dig it out as I talk, but you might say experienced, you might consider a more traditional training in the sense that he wandered off up into the Himalayas and found his master that had actually visited him at 9 years of age in his backyard and worked with him for 3.5 years. And although he went under the name also of Babaji, which just means, Baba means father, and Babaji is just an affectionate, if you will, form of Baba. And so Babaji is not such an uncommon name. So this guy had a more traditional experience, you might say, just bear with me, I'm just looking for the name of this. Yes, it's called Apprenticed to a Himalayan Master, written by, as I said, by this guy's just known as Sri M. It's a very unassuming title. Mm-hmm. And anyway, the point of all of this a conversation is that he also experienced directly actually the great Babaji on several occasions, but he also experienced Babaji's sister. Now, you don't hear, you might have heard of Babaji, but you probably haven't heard that he actually has a sister who's been around as long as he has. She's virtually unknown, unless you're, you might say, on the inner circle. And Yogananda actually told a story, I think, of his, what I might term his spiritual grandfather. In other words, the teacher of his teacher, let me put it that way, who experienced an event where Babaji's sister, who is known as Sri Devi, just means, you might say, great goddess, was present. And Sri M tells in his book an event where Sri Devi actually turned up directly in a cave where he was present with his master. And so this recurrence of the awareness of this feminine being, Sri Devi, prompted me to connect with her in meditation, as I'd been doing with Babaji for a long time. And when I first did it, it just overwhelmed me. It just blew me away. And I realized that what was happening for me was that her energy, if you will, was really triggering what I guess you would call the final balancing of the feminine aspect within me. And this went on for some time as I would connect with her in meditation each day. It was just incredibly powerful until I reached the point where you might say it seemed like that balance was achieved. But I remember that first moment. It just overwhelmed me. It was extraordinary.
Richard, dear, before we move on, there's something that I would like to address because we kind of glossed over it. For those who might want to join our conference calls, take a moment and describe what happens on a conference call and how those who wish to join can join. Can you do that?
Yes. Well, we have three calls a month, one which is called the Voices from Heaven Call, which has had a number of beings come forth on it. Yeshua is the one who seems to turn up most of the time these days. What we do is I take a message from them before the call. I share that message with the group, and Carolyn then leads a meditation. And then after that, we have a question and answer session. And so people ask, you know, whatever questions are there for them on whatever level. So it's very free and open kind of process.
And the questions are very interesting.
They can be. And they might be questions to Carolyn or me, or more often they're questions to whoever it is that has come forth on the call. So Carolyn or I channel the answer from that individual. And so that model applies to two other calls that we do each month. The other one is one of those is with Lord Metatron, and the other is with Archangel Michael. So we have those three calls each month. And if you're interested in participating in those, the best thing for you to do would be to send me an email just at my email address, which is richard@richardpresser.com, the presser being P-R-E-S-S-E-R, richard@richardpresser.com. Just send me an email and I'll figure it out with you on how best to get you involved.
I think anybody who is on a spiritual path will benefit greatly from this, because what usually happens is the people who are on these calls are of like-minded individuals. You don't always have friends where you can discuss such spiritual things with, but here on the call, you've got everybody who is on that call is interested in these spiritual elements, and you can ask your questions of the master who has brought forth that night's work, or personal experiences from some of the people on board.
Yes.
So anyway, you would, as I really do believe with this, benefit greatly from joining those calls. And you're most welcome. Matter of fact, I would say that we have people from all over the world who join those calls, don't we, Richard?
Indeed we do.
And then after the call, Richard usually sends out a record of that call to everyone.
That's true, I do. So there are people who, you might say, subscribe to the calls who, you know, for various reasons, very often time zone issues, for example, they're held at usually at 8:30 or 9 o'clock US Eastern time. And so if you translate that into Europe or the Middle East or South Africa and so on, it doesn't work terribly well. We're talking, you know, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And certainly there are some dedicated individuals who join those calls at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning in Europe and so on. And I honour them. It's the kind of thing that I used to do when I was participating in other people's calls, and they had them at what were ridiculous hours for me. But to me, it was important to participate in those things. So I did. And so I honor those who carry that level of commitment to get themselves up and to participate in those calls.
You're familiar with the past lifetime exploration that we do with people on the telephone. Do you want to take a moment and talk about that?
The key past life sessions?
Yes.
Yes, they're very interesting sessions. Basically, how they unfold is Carolyn has the individual step into a lift of sorts. She describes how you can view past lives is kind of like a whole series of rings, if you will, a ring for each lifetime that are stacked one on top of the other. And so what you can do is have a a lift of sorts with glass walls that travels up through those past lives until it reaches the lifetime that your soul feels is appropriate for you to learn from. And this might sound like a crazy kind of notion, but it has very real validity in what you might call the spiritual dimension. And so Carolyn guides you to step out of that lift into that particular lifetime when the lift has stopped, and then guide you through a process by which you can connect with who you were in that lifetime. And I find it very interesting that not everybody does this easily, but many people who have really no track record of doing this kind of work are able to do it in these circumstances, are able to come to understand what they're wearing, what their surroundings are, the kind of clothing they're wearing, and hence get a sense of who they were in that lifetime. It's truly extraordinary to witness this. And
it is
because of Carolyn's skills, she's right there. She can see it all. She knows who you're connecting with. I mean, to most of us, it's bizarre, but you know, she does it like, you know, I don't know, breathing would be about as basic it is as it is to her. It's just extraordinary. And so she's there witnessing that lifetime along with you, and hence guiding you so that you connect with it. She won't just give it to you on a platter. That's not her style, because part of what she's trying to do is have you grow spiritually to connect with this ability that we all have.
And thank
so
you, Richard.
It's great. They're fascinating sessions. I'm very often spellbound as I sit in the background listening to them, because I'm there kind of running the back end of things, you might say, keeping the wheels on the cart.
That's right, the back end of racers.
Yep.
Well, what's so fascinating, you're talking about what I see, that person steps into that lifetime and I see their feet and the shoes that they're wearing, and I ask them to look at their feet, and then, of course, this is with their mind's eye, to look up the body, and they will describe what they are wearing, and it is what I am seeing. I'll ask them how the hair is fashioned, if it's long or short, and I see that. We've had a lot of people, for instance, who were apostles and disciples of Yeshua. And I remember one incident where an individual thought that they had worked with Yeshua, and he came in on the call and told the person to pay attention to their left shoulder as he was etherically putting his hand on their shoulder, and the people could feel his energy. I just thought that was so exciting.
It is.
And so if any of this appeals to you and you want to do it for yourself, you could go to my website at carolynevers.com, and on the left-hand side there is a button where you can order a session like this.
Indeed.
So, Richard, do you care to talk about any of the healing sessions that you have done with people? I know you did a lot of soul healing. Can you explain or tell us what a soul healing session is? What does that mean?
Yes, well, the objective of the sessions, there are a number of pieces, and they run at least 90 minutes these days. They can run close to a couple of hours at times, depending on what we cover. But basically the format of them is that I begin by getting the individual to tell me about themselves. And part of that is to understand the journey that they've walked in this lifetime, because it tells me so much about where they are and what's going on. But the other thing it does is that by them communicating with me in that manner, I begin to pick up on their energy and I feel where they are energetically, which is for me very important to get that understanding so I can help them and get a sense of what needs to be dealt with. So that's really the first step. And then part of what I do in those sessions is give them a little better understanding of, you know, the time that we're in, the nature of negative past life karmic energies, which is, in my view, is misunderstood by most people for a bunch of reasons that I won't go through here, but essentially it's misunderstood. And so I've been given a command by Lord Metatron some years ago, which is designed to clear these negative past life karmic energies from all past lives. And so, you know, in about 10 minutes, it's done, which is really quite extraordinary if you think about it.
Truly. And we don't have anybody calling in with questions, which surprises me, because there's lots of things that you could question. But I suspect, Richard, they just want to hear us talk.
Perhaps. Well, that's what they're getting anyway. So anyway, this command, you know, unless there's a very specific and complex issue that that needs to be specifically understood by the individual, which needs specific attention, which is rare, these energies are just cleared out by this process. And so that takes care of past life energies. But we are all faced with carrying wounding in this lifetime, partly because of what we've been taught, which is so screwed up, and partly because we all, regardless of how ideal our childhoods have been, we carry wounding from that experience, which we need to heal. And so in my experience, there are really, I mean, there's a few other things I do, but there really are two fundamental things that we need to do to heal ourselves in this lifetime. And the first of these is to, I guess you could call it, recreate our relationship with our inner child, which is a pretty fundamental thing that we all need to do. And the other one is to reconnect with our love for ourselves, which we must by definition do, but it's so buried in how we've been brought up and what we've been told and taught and so on and so forth, that it's a completely foreign notion for most of us. And so there's work to be done to sort those things out and to heal ourselves in that regard. And it's not something I can do for you. I can explain the basis for it. I can give you the tools, which I know work, and then, you know, I, as I say, give you the guidance and the understanding and then set you free. And if you do that work, I promise you, you will heal yourself in this lifetime. And I know many people that have. I also know many people I've given the tools to who give up after a few days. Well, you know, I can't do anything about that. It just depends how committed you are to healing yourself. You know, a lot of people would rather complain about it rather than actually do something about it. And it's sad, but that's the reality. And so I can't change that.
I would like to be a little more explicit about that. Richard has worked with a lot of women in particular that have been sexually molested as children. You were talking about deep wounding, but I wanted to bring that forth, Richard, because there probably is not much that has a deeper wounding than that, a little child to be sexually exploited, and many times by members in their own family.
Yes, it's far more common than is recognized, far more common.
And so Richard works with that and helps people to clear themselves of all that has gone on. And I would say that you do a great service, Richard, because there's not many places that people can go to clear that unless they want to go to, you know, a psychiatrist over many meetings to get down to the root of the problem and clear it. And here you can do it in one installment on the telephone. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, so I feel a little humbled, I guess, because firstly, I've been given some tools, and secondly, I have been guided to walk a path which taught me many other tools to help with healing on many levels. And, you know, I had an experience quite recently where I came across an 11-year-old boy who was suicidal. Now, it's hard to imagine an 11-year-old kid who wants to kill himself. And I had no real idea why he felt that way. But, you know, his mother brought him to me. I became aware of him. And on that particular day, you know, he'd said at school that he wanted to commit suicide. And, of course, the teachers and principal went into panic mode and wanted to send him off to a psychologist and all the rest. And I asked his mum to bring him around. I said, maybe I can help. And she went away for about 45 minutes and came back. And she had a message on her phone from the principal saying, you know, you need to set up this visit to a psychologist and blah, 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 blah. And I said, I don't think it's necessary anymore. What do you think? And I asked the little boy, and he said, no, it's fine. His mother couldn't believe it. In 45 minutes, I'd set this kid free from what he was bound up inside of. And you know, I feel blessed to be able to have given him that gift and give his mother that gift, because, you know, there are so many things that I brought together to be able to do that for him, just the understandings and insights and experience that I've been through in my life. And so I take great joy from being able to help people in that kind of way. Some people find me a bit abrupt, but I don't say I'm the most gentle individual in the world, but I know the things that I do work.
They do indeed.
Carolyn laughs at me. She says, you know, you can say anything you like to people, but do it in a manner that doesn't take the shine off their shoes. Well, sometimes I'll stomp the tip of their shoe right in on their foot.
You stomp the daylights out of their toes.
I'm guilty as charged. I admit it. And some people don't take to that very well. That's it's part of the journey I've walked. It's part of the skills that I've learned, and they're a little unconventional sometimes.
Well, in a sense, healers in general are a little bit unconventional.
Spiritual and energy healers, yes, absolutely. In truth, it's the origin of healing. It's really the basis of true healing. You know, if you look at Western medicine, it's about treating the symptoms. It's an industry set up by the Rockefellers to sell pharmaceuticals. That's what it's about. It's not really about healing. And it's populated in large measure, people who actually want to help people. And so they don't understand what they're inside of. Anyway, I'll get off one of my hobby horses right now.
No, you're not on a high horse. One thing I can say and agree with, Richard, you're a passionate man. You are passionate about the things that you believe in.
I think that's true. Yeah.
We all need to passionately live our passion.
I agree.
There was something else I wanted to discuss, but I've lost the thread.
That's okay.
How are we doing? Yeah?
I was going to say, find that darning needle we were looking at earlier, and you might find the thread.
How are we doing on time? Are we getting close to the end of the hour?
We're at 9:47, so we got
we've got a little time.
10 minutes to go. Mm.
Well, after listening to our conversation, if there's anybody that wants to work with us a little further, you could go to my website at carolynevers.com, and on the left-hand side of the page, there is a button where you can order a session. You won't regret it. Much good comes out of it.
Hmm. So I must say I found it interesting coming back and visiting Carolyn. Those of you who've been following these calls for an extended time will know that we did these together for a long time, and I was living here at Carolyn's place effectively for many years. And I went back to Australia in April of this year, and so we've kept in contact, obviously, but I haven't seen Carolyn for several months, and she's in a pretty good place, I have to say. I'm pleased to see her state of health and her state of approach to things. It's the same old Carolyn.
Thank you, Richard. We're good friends. We'll always be good friends.
Yes.
We have a lot in common.
Indeed. And, this is perhaps a context where I can say that Carolyn and I undertook some work that very few people are aware of. Those who are very close to our work understand it, but we were guided to undertake some extraordinary clearing of what you might call expressions of the dark, not so much upon the planet, but beyond it, out into the cosmos, beyond this cosmos, out through all levels.
Is it fair to say both, Richard?
What do you mean both?
The Earth and beyond the Earth?
Well, no, the clearing wasn't, not much of the clearing was about the Earth per se, Carolyn, because there are other mechanisms at work. I mean, we are witnessing right now the depth of darkness that's still present on the planet.
That's true.
You know, the material that's coming out about, Hillary Clinton right now, the stuff that Steve Pachenik has been bringing forth and others, some of which has been revealed in the recent WikiLeaks emails, if you're tracking this stuff. It's the tip of the iceberg of the depth of, you might call it evil, on the planet. And so that really hasn't changed terribly much as a result of what we did. And so most of the work that we did was related to beyond planet Earth and to an extent those elements that were supporting what was happening on the Earth. But rather it was beyond that. And how it would manifest really was that these various expressions of darkness would come forth and interfere with Carolyn. And, I've watched her when her health was much better, screaming out in such pain that she wanted to cross over. It was so intense. And Carolyn doesn't have low pain threshold. It was quite extraordinary stuff. And so my task was to figure out where the interference was coming from. And then once I'd figured that out, I was able to clear it because I was, again, given the ability to do that. And so I can't say I got it first time. In fact, very often I didn't, and often it was an iterative process to figure it out. And sometimes I couldn't figure it out, and Carolyn would get an insight, and once we figured out what the source was, I could clear it. And so, pain was one source of it. Escalating blood pressure was another. I recall a time when Carolyn was in great pain or in bursts of pain in her left knee, and I would put my hand either side of her left knee, and the joint would be moving sideways. I could feel it in my hands. Now, we don't have muscle structures that move the joint sideways. It doesn't happen. You know, they're structured vertically. The joint essentially stays in place unless we do something pretty extreme with it, either as an athlete or something of that nature. So, you know, this movement was simply not something that the physical body itself would do. And, you know, again, it was a powerful illustration that the stuff that was going on was real. And this went on for years. In fact, there a lot of the time it was pretty much 24 hours a day that this stuff would go on. It was quite extraordinary. It went on for years and years. It doesn't happen now because that work is complete. She doesn't get interfered with in that manner anymore. And so this really started before I came here, maybe 2007, 2008, and finished, you know, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. And most people in the world have no idea about that work. And that's okay.
That's true.
That's okay. But
up another point, Richard. There's still some people who are being interfered by the dark.
There definitely are, yes.
And so I would like to mention that, you know, they have some people that they could turn to if they find themselves in that situation.
Yes.
How would they go about that, Richard?
Well, they can send me an email at the email address that I gave, richard@richardpresser.com. And I'm not giving any guarantees. I mean, my experience is there are times when my skills work and there are times when they don't, and I can't explain that exactly. I think that's true of most healers of various sorts, but you know, I have some very capable and powerful healers who are my friends who, when they get you know, extreme levels of interference they can't deal with, they call me. And vice versa. It's very rare that I am interfered with, but it can happen. In fact, when I did the clearing work for that little boy I mentioned, I was interfered with as a result of one of the sources of that interference, and I had to call a friend to take care of it for me. So, you know, these things happen, but certainly it's been my experience that very often the skills that I've been given enable me to clear, let's say, powerful negative interference. And most people live their lives oblivious to these processes and forces at work in the world. In some ways, I wish we could all live lives that were independent of this kind of stuff, but it's not the reality. There's more complexity to life than we are encouraged to believe.
Absolutely. Richard, I don't know if you have an answer to this, but what is your earliest memory as Richard Presser, spiritually?
Oh, spiritually?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I understand the question exactly. When did I begin to look beyond the temporal domain? Is that really your question?
No, but answer that, and then I'll answer the question myself.
Well, you know, I was trained as an engineer. I have a PhD in engineering, so I'm a very left brain character. You know, I was reasonably successful in the IT business. I was standing in front of the whiteboard in my office in about 1991, I think it was. And at that stage, I was running a business that I owned with another partner, and I was running it. And it was about a $25 million Australian business. And, you know, to all intents and purposes, I had all the trappings of success, I guess, that most people aspire to. And I was standing in front of the whiteboard in my office, and I realized that all that I'd been creating in my life was trying to fill this hole that I felt, you might say, in my heart center, a hole that I hadn't recognized was there until I realized I wasn't filling it. And so it was like this double whammy, this bomb went off inside me. And, you could call it an epiphany. I guess it was, in a sense. And that's really when my journey started. And it was a moment that I won't forget in this lifetime, I can assure you. I remember it vividly. It was just, it really was like this bomb went off inside me. And I had no clue who I was or what I was doing or why I was doing it. And it started a journey that continues to this day. 25
Amazing,
years
later.
Isn't it? Yes, it is. And I'm thankful for it. You know, it's been tough in many areas. I mean, I basically deconstructed my life over a few years after that. All that I had created, I pretty much destroyed and had no clue why or what or whatever for a long time.
Completely true, my dear. We've talked about this, and I seem to recall that one of the reasons that this happened to you is that you were developing your own intuition.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm clear about why it happened. Something I admire in Steve Jobs was his comment that you can only make sense of life looking backwards, and I am a great believer in that. So, Carolyn, we should wrap up here.
Yeah, here we got 1 minute. I'm surprised that people didn't call in. We had so many things that they could question. So anyway, my friends, if you want to go through any of this, give me a jingle at Carolyn at CarolynEvers.com, and on the left-hand side, order a session. Do you have anything to add quickly to that, Richard, about what you do?
Well, no, Carolyn, but your email address today is Carolyn.Evers@CarolynEvers.com.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone. Until next time.
Good night. Until next time.